making things. You know, the Shoah was taught by the Zionists. It's a Hungarian way of looking at it. There's two interesting aspects of what you said.
Yeah, but this has nothing to do with Zionism. This has to do, he's calling attention that in Eastern Europe they used Pelishishtig and in Germany they didn't. What got Michael Miller upset is that he said he had no right to make the comparison. The Germans had 5-6 years notice and the other people had six days notice.
It's not the interesting thing that...
I read what
he went through. He had to have an answer.
There's a world that one can talk about. Min hametsa, perfidy, that whole area, unbelievable. But you got to listen. You have to hear. He's quoted by Lopiansky. I'm quoting Lopiansky. I'm dealing with the business part. Believe me, I'm not a chassid of his vis-a-vis Zionism. You know, we have plenty to say. Vic, I have one question for you. Did your family know Morty Zielenfreund's family from the Lower East Side? Dr. Zielenfreund, Morty.
No.
How did you know the family?
Years ago.
Because Marker asked me. Okay, and Ellie, I have a question for you. Your wife's father, what is his first name?
Dove.
Nussbaum.
Pinchak.
No, that's Pinchak. Your mother.
My wife's mother.
What was her maiden name?
My wife's mother.
It's Laurie Nussbaum.
That's that, yeah.
Father's name. Your father-in-law.
Grandpa Mike.
So you understand our connection? Mike was my classmate.
Really?
God, what I'm dealing with here. Laurie was one of my greatest students ever. Okay, so come to my... I have to give you another gift. This is unbelievable how we tie together on all sides and fold and pinch up. And Laurie... But what the heck is she doing in Chicago? Half her class came in Aliyah. What are your plans, Ellie? Give it to me straight. Don't double talk me.
If you want to stay.
I'm going to stay. It's not wanna. I'm going. Bani Shalom, Shikir Issa, Trinkin Musa. You know what that Lifshitz did on, we used to sing Gramin, Shikir Issa Goy. Yeah, and they would sing about a Jew that a goyim was drinking and a yid was davening. And Rav Dov Lifshitz would get hysterical. A yid was davening, a yid vil davening. Do me a favor, children. Who knows Yiddish here? God, I'm stuck. Straighten them out after the class. Back here. Let me get started. I turned it on. You have no idea who your father... You have no idea how he interacted. Your father used to fly around his own personal jet. Am I right or wrong? A company jet? Was the CEO? Mike Nussbaum? Baruch Hashem. I'm telling him about his... You don't know who you come from and Kanayin Hara and where you are. At the Brit, Charlie, you missed it yesterday. I said he accomplished something I never saw before in my life. He had a Brit, Kanayin Hara, for a son. The great-grandfather was the mohel of his great-grandson. I never saw that before in all my years.
Yes, sir. And the other great-grandfather was the son.
I was right, so all right.
But the Sanig Mu'uma, or whatever, one of those things, was also the...
Great-uncle.
Great-uncle,
Seder. Okay, and I just want to make one other comment. I'll make the date in a second. Will you see Morty? Isn't he gone? Morty is gone. He's away. He's in England. With Morty Tarragon? Send regards, that's all. We were together on Shabbos. Yeah. Okay.
I heard from someone in Boston. He listens to every one of you, sure. It's unbelievable. I said, why do you listen to him?
Baruch Hashem. Okay. I just want to tell you, at times I'm corrected and people don't realize Jack leaves me a home message. Rabbi Yeruchim Gerelle, character par excellence. So Yeruchim was famous at the subway. We all took the subway then. He lived a half block from the subway, Jessup Avenue, right off the Grand Concourse. So he would see a Talmud of his with a girl, and the kid would suffer, and he would kill the kid a few weeks later, let him roast in his own juice, and then say, "As amis night habach nishkezen my gans 11, such an ugly girl I never saw in my whole life." So Jack has someone tell a story on the train. I'm talking about the early 50s. This story repeated itself 100 times over. And I got another correction on the Rav. I wrote back, "Don't correct me. We're talking about two different things." In the 60s, there was an incident where the Rav was davening in the, might have been the Morgenstern Minyan, and it was Yom HaTzmut. And they read the Torah on a Wednesday or something, Sunday, Wednesday, following Kibbutz Adati. And the Rav got hysterical and gave a whole discourse against this Mishagasev in you were davening in Lachadodi and all that we do, we'll blow shofar. I don't have to tell you, I don't have time now to go into it, but halachically it has to be analyzed. So someone wrote to me, "No, it happened in the 70s. It happened again in the 70s. I was living here, and we heard the explosion from America there. I don't think it was, they said Halil and Yom HaTzmut with a bracha, and that's what got the Rav upset." Okay, let me begin. We have a world to do today. Today is Monday, Baruch Hashem, the 28th of October, 2019. Correction. Mark, Rabbi Dr. Lieutenant Colonel Mark Wiener writes to me, "I mentioned that there were five people in the first class in the Kollel. 1976, it was not a formal class yet, but Yeshiva was sending, there were only four. And I want to tell Mark, I checked it out, he's correct. Mark Wiener, Naomi Amsel, Shlagai Gross, and unfortunately gone, Gil Mark, Sikroni Mazacha. Mark also said something else interesting to me with the Psak of the Rav, and it may explain something. We've mentioned in passing the Sheila that came to Rav Moshe Feinstein about having an Israeli flag and an American flag in the shul, the Young Israel that asked the question, Divrei Chol, and Rav Moshe answered, "It's not nice, not good, but with the Evid, don't make a fuss over it." No, an Israeli and American flag. So Mark says, and he may be correct, following the establishment of the State of Israel, we all got excited, put an Israeli flag in Young Israel, but once you have an Israeli flag, you have to have an American flag. That is Chukei United States. And Mark tells a story here, and Mark is very reliable, that he remembers in the Morg Shul, Shabbos morning, they were making a Mishaberech for the State of Israel. And some person got all upset, "What about America?" So they asked the Rav. And the Rav said, "If you're making a Mishaberach for Israel, you must make one for America." Nachum Lam, talking about Rabbi Joe Lookstein, adds to all that we've said about Rabbi Lookstein and Americanizing davening and Torah. And you all know that before we blow the shofar, we say Lamanetzeach seven times. It's al pi Kabbalah. You can blow shofar and not say Lamanetzeach. And believe me, normally you'd be Yotzei. But all right, I stand there, I'm the Makri, so I admit I'm going like this with my fingers. One, two, three, all right. So Rabbi Lookstein abolished it. Only once. People sit there counting their fingers. They lose count. Better to say it only once. And that's one point that his father, who taught for Rabbi Lookstein, my chaver, told him. Another point was that Rabbi Lookstein abolished in KJ going out for Yiska, where all the people without parents walk out. And he turned it into a ceremony with a memorial prayer for all the dead, and not just for your parents. All right, it adds dignity. In the State of Israel, this issue has come up too. What we do in Israel is we make a yiska for the 6 million, and for those that fell in the army and in Pulat Terror, lo aleinu, those that fall, and then the kids walk out. Is it good, bad? Do you have to walk out? It's ayin hara. It's minig Yisrael, you know, and it's hard for me to abolish it. And let the children walk out. Baruch Hashem, they have parents. I once didn't walk out. Today, of course, I have to walk out like everyone else. All right. Excuse me?
The other way around. You once had to walk out, and now you have to.
No, I once didn't have to walk out, and today I walk out Minig Yisrael. All right. Now, what we've said until now.
How can you walk out against the skin?
No, I say today I have to remain in. Right. Then I had a choice. I walked out. Today, unfortunately, like everyone else my age, when my mother died, people said, "Who are you sitting shiva for?" I said, "My mother." They looked at me. You know, my mother was 98, and I was already well over my 70. I was over 70, well over 70. And people couldn't believe I'm sitting shiva for my mother. But all right, already. It's on the 39 years that I'm saying Yiska for my father. Now I say for my father, my mother, my grandparents, there's no one else in the world left to say for them. So I say for my grandparents too. It's b'nei banim harein kabanim. So it's you have a bit of an, I wouldn't say an obligation, but certainly it's a nice thought. All right, I'm ready to begin. What we've seen for so many months is great rabbanim, American-trained, even American-born, Rabbis Bernard Drachman, Rabbi Leo Young, Rabbi Herbert S. Goldstein, and the youngest among them, Rabbi Joseph Lichtstein. These were rabbis of a different ilk. And while all of them were Shomer Torah Svat, there was a certain modernity that all of them possessed. And they succeeded. They conquered the world in a sense that they showed one could remain Orthodox in America, could remain a Torah true Jew, and yet be part of the general scene. And this was an achievement. This achievement goes way beyond these four individuals, because in 1887 you have the organization of the Jewish Theological Seminary. JTS, as I've lectured many years ago in great detail, JTS was organized in opposition to the Reform movement. 1887. It's a year after Yeshiva Seitz Chaim, which ultimately morphs into Yeshiva University. Now, you all know why JTS was organized. The Reform movement opened up a rabbinical school in German in Cincinnati in the 1870s. Until then, all rabbis in America were European trained. There was no such thing as being ordained in the United States. And at their first ordination, they celebrated it with a beautiful dinner at the Essex House in Cincinnati, white glove service. And all of you know it's known as the tray for dinner. The first course they served was shrimp cocktail. And this caused the commotion. They had invited many rabbis, the so-called Orthodox rabbis as well, from Philadelphia, from New York. And when they served the shrimp cocktail, people stood up and ran out. And there was a recognition that out of the Hebrew Union College in Cincinnati, Torah will not thrive. Rabbis will not be observant. We have to organize our own institution. And JTS was organized in 1887, and as I also lectured in great detail decades ago, by 1902, JTS was falling apart. I visited the building. I was shocked to see windows broken, not repaired. When I say visited, memoir literature, you live it, you live it. Normally, if you don't live it, you're not a good Rebbe, you're not a good teacher, you're not even a good Jew, because you're living only in the present. The Jew present is the least important. The Jew has to live in the past and the future. He eats in the present and sleeps in the present, that's all. So when I visited the building, broken windows. Why didn't JTS succeed? And the answer is very simple. By 1900, 1910, 1920, you had millions of East European immigrants. And even if 80%, 90% did not remain Shomer Shabbat, they remained conscious what Judaism is, what Torah is, the Arav Daf Oiskumen, the Arav Daf Reiten Eli, the way a Rav has to look, the way a Rav has to speak, the way a Rav has to act. I'm quoting to you from an editorial from the Yiddish Tageblatt. I quoted in Revel. These are rabbis. They boasted in the seminary that they learned Masechet Megillah. It took them 1 year to learn Masechet Megillah. No, you're a Perisha Yitzhak. Masechet Megillah takes me a week to learn. Even if, as I told you, I knew Jews who were in Shomer Shabbos. They came home from, you worked 5.5 days. You came home from work Saturday, 1 o'clock. The man made Kiddush, ate a Suda, sat down and learned Gemara for 3 hours, 4 hours. I'm an eyewitness. I can give you the name. It's not important. I don't want to give the name. May he rest in peace. He came to visit me in Machon Gold. I was teaching and he walked in and he hugged me. He kissed me. He was retired already. He was a total Shomer Shabbos at that time. So, the seminary, who's going to take them? The Reform. They don't need seminary rabbis. They have their rabbis in Cincinnati. But there was a Jew in America who we've often spoken about, Jacob Schiff. Jacob Schiff was raised on the lap of Rav Simson Raphael Hirsch, came from Frankfurt. In America, he becomes president of Temple Emanuel, in addition to becoming a multi-billionaire by today's standards. And some of you know that they attribute all the rescue of the Jews via Shanghai, which is the Mir Yeshiva, is because Jacob Schiff financed the Japanese in the Russo-Japanese War because he was furious at the way the Tsar, the pogroms in Russia. So it's an amazing story. Jacob Schiff came to the seminary in 1902 and he gave them heavy money. And he said, and I quote his term, "We need an enlightened orthodoxy in America, not just reform." And he said, "Look around, bring someone over who can build the faculty." And that's how they get Solomon Schechter. Solomon Schechter, Shneur Zalman Schechter in Hebrew, you all understand. Shneur Zalman, he came from a Chabad family. His father was a Sheikhet. And Solomon Schechter was certainly personally observant. He was orthoprax. He was not entirely orthodox. If you read some of his works with Torah Shebaal Peh, historic Judaism, there certainly was a tendency towards from the historical school. I can't go into details now, but from Wissenschaft der Studentum, the historical school, Zachariah Frankel, Breslau, if you know what I'm talking about, he was orthoprax, I would say 80% orthodox in thinking. Read his volumes. They put together 3 volumes of his collected articles on Judaism. And you see with Torah Shebaal Peh, see, that's the touchstone where we differ from the right-wing conservative movement. How do you view Torah Shebaal Peh? Is it a gradual development or are the guidelines are there from Maimat Sinai. What we have to do is apply it in Dar B'chol Dover Dar. But it's not that the rabbis develop new ideas. It's that the Talmid Chachamim apply the ideas. And this is response to literature, Shevet and Shuvit, and all that goes with it, etc. Well, time moves on. I'm walking around today. I'm considered an old man my age, all right? I think I'm a youngster yet, I came into this building, Yontif Sheni, tremendous minion. Torah Shraga, observing a full Yontif Sheni. I said to someone, "Tell me, don't they know the Rav's psak? This is the Rav's home, this is the Rav's building. Who's the Rav? Who's the Rav?" In New York, a Talmud said to me, Rebbe, the Rub's opinion is irrelevant today. He last functioned in the 1970s. No, when I hear words like that, I want to rip Kriya. But this is a reality of life. Time marches on. Go over to a kid today in the Bronx and say, who is Joe DiMaggio? The kid will look at you. It's bad enough that Rabbi Reuben doesn't know who Ted Williams was. But imagine today, you go over to a kid standing out.
You mentioned the role of Ted Williams and Joe DiMaggio in the same sentence.
Yitzchak, G'dayle Mesheba Aretz, each one in his tchum. But time marches on, and people change. The environment changes. By the 1920s, you have a second generation growing up in America. Your mother speaks to you in Yiddish, and you answer her in English. Right or wrong? Normie, what language did you speak with your parents?
My parents' English, my grandparents. They
spoke to them, get at Yiddish. And you answered them in English. They understood you 90% and you understood them 80%. But this is the way I had the same thing, same story with my grandparents. All right. Now, how does this affect religion? The East European second, third generation children, they didn't want a shtibble. They didn't understand Yiddish that well. They didn't want reform. It was too goyish. Too far gone. But the seminary is producing a rabbi. He's Shomer Shabbos. He eats kosher. He's Americanized. He speaks English. He went to college. He can preach in English. And here you come to that tremendous conflict. Where do you draw the line? We're living dual culture. We started yesterday, we're speaking yesterday about Las Vegas. We started yesterday, can you go to the theater? Can you go to the ballpark? I'll get to Thanksgiving Day. We'll see Reb Moshe, we'll see Reb Menashe Klein. These are serious questions. Dual culture. Look at the way we're dressed. Did our great-grandparents dress like that? I have pictures of my great-grandparents with Langebeckishes, Elichi Yidden, Horton Payas. All right, I'm a Litvak. I hate to say it. I can learn a lot better than my great-grandparents. Baruch Hashem. Arrogant. But that's a Litvak. Normally you can't help it. A Litvak has a certain arrogance. Shmini Shebe Shmini, the Gemara says in Baba Batra. Eli, by the 1920s, JTS is not just doing well, it's doing very well. It has millions of Jews now who are ripe for the message. And you're feeling the pressure of America. And there's no greater pressure. This 100 years later, same Herbie, the same pressure we suffer with today, the feminist movement. There's nothing harder to reconcile Torah Hashem Tamima with feminist ideas. 100 years ago, the women were hysterical. We're going to high school already. We're going to normal school, it was called, colleges, to be teachers. Later, we have already the first lawyers, Jewish women who become lawyers. It was epic making. We have to sit behind the wall, behind the machitza. Problems are beginning. All right, 100 years later, here are the women. We know Shas and Paiskin. We can Paskin better than Rakefet, better than Zakheim, all right? Better than Reuben. I'm just mentioning the rabbis in the class. We can Paskin better. We're more learned. Why can't we be accepted as Poskot Rabboniyot? All right, this pressure, where do you draw the line? Where can you compromise? Take Kabbanot. What does Kabbanot mean? How many of you say Kabbanot every morning? Kabbanot, the whole davening is in place of Kabbanot, right or wrong. Where do you draw the line? This is a question that haunts us until today, and I don't have to apologize. I gave hundreds upon hundreds of letters. Here, we spent months and months. Can you keep a shoe parking lot open on Shabbos? He spent months and months right in this classroom. I want to read to you an email I just received from a Talmud. He's on the rabbinic staff in Atlanta, Georgia, Rabbi Jeff Francis, if you recognize the name. And the famous Beth Jacob Synagogue, regarding the Beth Jacob Synagogue that came up more than once during the recent Sunday responses, Sheyurim, and the open parking lot on Shabbos. Yes, the lot is still open on Shabbat and Chagim, which I assume is based on the responsum that Rabbi Emanuel Feldman received from Rav Rudiman, as you explained in your shiur. However, it should also be noted that if one were to drive to shul in Atlanta on Shabbat or Chag, it would be extremely hard to find an open spot anywhere in the lot. All the spots are usually taken by vehicles driven to Beit Jacob on Erev Shabbat Chag and left there by the many mispalalim who come to Daven. And you know what that means. I was just in Lawrence for Shabbat. You look at the Shari Tefillah, the lot is filled, but it's not Shabbos. These are people, my dear Talmud, Jesse Sonnenblit, drives his car, parks, and after Shabbos, he takes his keys out of his shtender, and we drive home. It's all of three blocks, but I guess in suburbia, you're not allowed to walk. It's a general prohibition, nothing to do with Shabbos. No, this very Shmini Atzeret, when I walked into the lot, I noticed wall-to-wall cars parked virtually in every location. And during the Chag, the only vehicles I noticed were a few transportation company vehicles delivering senior citizens to the shul and one elderly couple who arrived for Yiska. No, this is in the year 2020, a very prominent Orthodox congregation, probably the most well-known Orthodox congregation in the entire South, is Memphis, Tennessee, part of the South. Maybe Memphis, Tennessee rivals Atlanta, Georgia. And here you have Eidat Nemanah, that one week ago on Shmini Atzeret, a car drives up, elderly people coming for Yiska. Is this an Orthodox shul? Where do we draw the line? Okay. We struggle 100 years already. JTS 1920. Is it Orthodox? Traditional? What does conservative mean? Reform, we all know that word from the post-Mendelssohn era. Orthodox is what the Reform coined the word, calling us Orthodox. I refuse to use it. All of you know, if anyone asks me who I am, I'm a Torah Jew. Orthodox means narrow-minded. And anyone who's a Talmud of the Rav and understood the Rav is not narrow-minded. But I have to use terms that you will acknowledge. Reform, Orthodox. What's JTS? And remember, when you look at their constitution, you look at the preamble, it says clearly, organized to represent traditional Judaism, written Torah, oral Torah, Hebrew language, everything that Hebrew Union College was not. So, a terrific question. What is conservative? What is traditional? What is Orthodox? All right. One man brought about this entire question, put it into the headlines, and ultimately, because of this man and what happened in Cleveland, I would say that by 1930, the lines were clearly drawn. Orthodox, conservative, reform. Solomon Goldman, his years, 1893-1953. His biography is very similar to almost every prominent conservative rabbi of the first half of the 20th century. Born in Poland, others were born in Lithuania, he was born in Russia. Goldman came to New York a little kid. Guess where he studied? Yeshivat Rabbeinu Yitzchak Elchanan. Though there wasn't much competition. RJJ, Eitz Chaim were elementary schools. You wanted a high school, you wanted beyond, Yeshivat Rabbeinu Yitzchak Elchanan. Every last well-known conservative, Rabbi Adler, Rabbi Free, every last one went to Leeds. And then they went on, bright kids, Jewish minds. If their parents had money, they went on to Columbia University. If their parents didn't have money, they went to City College. CCNY was then considered one of the top colleges in the world, not just New York. It had the top prof, Morris Rayfield Cohen. It had world famous professors. What an atmosphere. But that's 100 years ago. And, excuse me? It was a poor man's Harvard, and there were professors there who wouldn't go anywhere else. The thrill of teaching these Jewish kids from impoverished homes, basically, poor homes. It was a thrill. The minds, who they produced at CCNY. Morris Rayfield Cohen, by the way, you should know, lived across the street from Yeshiva University, what today is on Amsterdam Avenue, and he davened Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur in the auditorium. Lampert Auditorium was turned into a shul, Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, for the Balabatim. Was then a big, big Jewish neighborhood, and they made money. In other words, you bought seats so that Lampert Auditorium became basically a fundraiser for the yeshiva, Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, Aseret Yemei Tshuva, and Morris Rayfield Cohen down there. He still had the neshama that he knew Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. Now, Solomon Goldman, very bright fellow, is ordained 1918 by the seminary, later goes on to get a master's, two doctorates, honorary doctorates, and he first is a rabbi in Brooklyn for 1 year, and then he comes to Cleveland, and he becomes rabbi of the B'nai Jeshurun congregation. We'll come back to all this in much more detail to see what happened here. But here he was in a congregation, and later this congregation merges with another congregation. I'll give you all the details in a minute. They build a $1 million shul, which was unheard of, $1 million, early 1920 money. But Goldman is making compromises. Began a total Shomer Mitzvah. We have letters that he wrote to other rabbis. He permitted the organ, Simchas Torah, confirmation services. Now tell me, can you play an organ or can't you play an organ? What did they have in the Beis HaMikdash? Right or wrong? Music. On Yontif. The Leviim. What do you say, Yomo?
According to the Gemara, one understanding of the Gemara in Erechin, on Yud Aleph, they had an organ, a water organ, and
Okay. For Baruch Hashem, had all types of instruments, cymbals, trumpets, an organ. According to, you just heard what the Yomo said. We got to thank Rebbe Yitzvei, Yomo, that you're with us. Got it? You see the smile on his face. So you know the story I told you was accurate. Norman, What is a shul? A mikdash ma'at. Why can't you have an organ? You know what greater machlokes there was around us in Hungary in the mid-1800s? The enormous Rabbi Aaron Choron, do you recognize the name? Published the whole sefer, was a Lamdan Mufak, permitted an organ in the shul. Goldman at first was a tzaddik, only on Simchas Torah, which was Yontif Sheni, Shel Galyot, and on a confirmation service. Later in life, you see, once you make a compromise, this is the Chatam Sofer, fought so bitterly, and he coined the expression, paraphrasing the Mishnah, Chadash Asur Min HaTorah. He was frightened stiff. The minute you start making a compromise, you don't know where it's going to end. And we all know what life is about. It applies to any... The Balei Musar analyzed this very well. It's the human trait. The human trait. The Gemara says it so beautifully. Mishin enasa doma vera v'nishneit hutrelo. That you do a sin twice, it's permissible. It's psychological. I did it once, I got away, I didn't die, it helped, I do it a second time, all right, we're only humans, we have an organ. Ultimately, he wrote that it's permissible, not just on Yontif Sheni, but on davening Shabbos and Yontif services. We have another letter of his, to another rabbi. Jewish services an act characterized by a proper devotional mood, largely due to their length. All right, I just read something about Rabbi Joe Lookstein. Isn't it true or not? In America, I still can't get used to the davening there. I'm out of America 50 plus years. You go to shul 9 o'clock Shabbos morning, and by the time it's over, it's 12:30. How can you sit 3.5 hours as a langa davening? No, what do you do? When I came to Maplewood, where do you draw the line? What can you improve? People love shtibbles. What's so great about a shtibble? They start at 8:30, and boy, do they go quick. Before you know it, it's Shema Yisrael, the Kriyas HaTeira, you don't understand the word. But wow, I have one grandson, he lays, boy, do I have to lean forward and concentrate. Like, Vic heard that grandson laying. By the way, he started his world as a career officer now. A week ago Wednesday, the new phase of life began. So he's a good kid, but wow. No, what did I do in Maplewood? I'm building the first Orthodox shul in suburban Essex County. Here it is, it's 1962, I come in, it's a fallout from Newark. I have to tell you, I abolished the Mishaberax. I saw the Torah laning is long, people get bored, they're talking, they're gossiping. One Mishaberax at the very end. By the way, in Lubavitch, I later learned they do the same thing. No, but am I allowed to do this? What do you say, though? What would your father say? What would your uncle say? Is it that everyone made a Mishaberach? Here I am coming along, a dummy, a bummy, a crummy, a kid from the Bronx. What? Who the heck are you to abolish Mishaberach? But it enhanced the service. Joe Lookstein abolished 7 times Laman HaTzayach. We saw that in 40 minutes ago. What can we do? Yitzchak, are you upset with this or are you accepting it? Where do you draw the line? Very fascinating. So you know what he did? He introduced in his shul, Solomon Goldman, tri-annual reading of the Torah. Could you imagine? We just read Shabbos, Pashat Bereshit. What was it, 150 sentences? Noach, I think, is even slightly longer. One is 140, 150 plus. Rebbeinu Shelolem divided into thirds. Where does it say that you have to read so much on Shabbos. Reading the Torah, I don't know. I open up the Torah, I don't find one pasuk that says that every Shabbos you have to read the Torah. Eli, the only time you're commanded to read the Torah is Hakel. Right or wrong? Nu, the Gemara and Baba Kama, Daf Pei Aleph, Halchu, Shloshet Yamim, Bli Torah, V'nilu. And this is one of the earliest, the takonot, I would say. It's not a gezeirah, it's a takonot, to add to your spiritual welfare. So, he introduced 7 aliyot, each aliyah, 3 sentences. It's all this is documented, every word. You can look him up, you'll get sources on Solomon Goldman. Where do you, Herbie, do you see the problem here? This is America. It's not a shtibble. It's dignity. The congregation begin at 9:30 and finish at 11. The high point is the sermon. People will sit. People will listen. The haftorahs. Excuse me. Yeah, no. The triannual. We know. There's plenty. Yesh al milah smoch. No, you go and do this today in Flatbush. Introduce triannual reading, your name will be up in every billboard, and believe me, they will not be complimentary words about you.
Everyone knows the difference,
they're
too busy talking.
I want to give Flatbush credit that they don't talk so much during davening. All right, the Haftorah, he cut down to 10, 11, in other words, it had to make sense. You couldn't cut it, but you cut, like Malkus says, we watch a movie together, so I don't have that much time, a half hour. So we'll reach a half hour, I don't know, cut it, give it a, see where it's makes seichel to cut, where the scene ends, you cut it. So sometimes they read 10 sentences, 11 sentences. Wow, this man. Not only that, they say he gets credit. People think it's Mordechai Kaplan, but they claim historically he was the first conservative rabbi to call up women to the Torah and allow them to recite the blessings. This is a bit of an overlook at Solomon Goldman.
What do you do for Chumash? They print a Chumash for the triannual?
I don't think they ever printed a triannual, but they would announce. I've never yet seen a triannual Chumash, but they would announce, we break here, you know, what pasuk, next year, the Gabbai keeps track, and you pick up where you left off a year earlier.
Do we have knowledge of how it was
No, I don't think we know exactly how they broke it up. To the best of my ability, we do not have a record. But it means triannual. You take a third, a third, a third. It's not so hard to figure out. Lay until Revi, the next year Revi Chamishi, the final year Shishi Shvi, etc. It's not so hard. Why would Vayelech present problems?
So sure.
Oh, Vayelech, you mean I'm thinking, Mr. Breshit, you're talking Devarim, Vayelech would present problems? All right, 13 psukim can all be done. All right, more than that. And here I quote to you from an article published online by Professor Alan Brill. Do you recognize the name? Ellie, tell the class who what Professor Brill is. Was he taught? He taught at YU, and unfortunately, YU passed up on him. So I understand he's very capable, but there was inattention, so he moved elsewhere, and he's published a great deal. I've seen some of his work; it's on a level. It's Professor Alan Brill. He writes the Orthodox conservative split. And Rabbi Solomon Goldman. And he also describes Solomon Goldman and some of the things that this man did. And here, among the things that Rabbi Goldman instituted in public, he gives a sermon and he denies the Sinaitic meaning matan Torah at Har Sinai. that it really didn't happen. It was a much more gradual process, not revelation. Now, it's amazing that this rabbi in public, getting up and speaking, this is Meissen B'chol Yom today, the most famous conservative rabbi in Los Angeles, Rabbi David Wolpe, W-O-L-P-E. When he comes up to preach, people describe the scene to me. I yet knew his father from Philadelphia, was a conservative rabbi, but a much more traditional person. When he comes up to preach, it's like Moses coming down from Mount Sinai. They stand in awe. And you all know, he got up. You'd see it in Mitzrayim, never happened. This was before Pesach. It must be a decade or so ago. Time doesn't stand still, maybe it's 15 years. No archaeological evidence. And any time you find archaeological evidence, they'll give you 100 reasons why it's not correct. It's an amazing thing, you know. I once had a conversation with Nechama Leibovich. So we were talking about, you know, I was very close to Nechama. I brought her actually into the Kollel. She taught. I can show you exactly where she taught. Those classrooms don't exist. They're offices, but I can show you where I taught, where she taught. And I once had a conversation with Nechama because we spent many Shabbatot together at Machon Gold. She lived. She said to me, whenever you're there for Shabbat, you tell me, I'll eat with you. And she used to, I could barely eat when she was there because the whole Sudah, she wanted to know what the Rav said in this, what the Rav said in that. She was quite a lady. But my children got to know Nechama Leibovich. It's a schut. So I said to Nechama, you and your brother, Yeshaya, you're so different. And yes, we differ on many things on Hashkafa and the Kotel. I don't have to quote some of Yeshaya Leibowitz's witticisms. But she said, on one thing we agree, that biblical criticism is pure anti-Semitism. And she felt very strongly about that. And you know, whenever you raise a question in the Bible and you'll give an answer, they will give you 10 reasons why your answer is not right. She says the starting point is they're out to show the Jews deceived the world. So here, I don't know, I get so upset. If you'd see it, Mitzrayim didn't exist, then why do we have a Pesach? Why do we celebrate? Matan Torah didn't exist, gradual development. You have from the conservative movement time and again, Chanukah never happened. The whole miracle of the candles, of the oil, right or wrong, Purim never happened. Entire books have been written. No, the whole Yiddishkeit, if I paraphrase the Ramban, our parents deceived us. Underline the word deceived us. You know what I'm referring to. The Ramban says the greatest proof in the world for Torah is that it's passed on from generation to generation, and parents to children to grandchildren. Ribbono shel Olam. That's. But this. That's what I'm referring to. Gaster, Theodor Gaster. That's exactly what I refer, but what I have to mention his name, but Beseda, you mentioned and his father was the Chacham of the Sfada community in the British Empire. His father was a Talmud Chacham. But that's life. That's children. That's why Freud is not totally wrong. You know with the Rav, I've told you the vote with the Rav. The Rav, it's a meritic vote. I'm hesitant to say it publicly, but it should be said. The Rav would come to the RCA conventions. As I said yesterday, the conventions had to end by Thursday. The Rabbanim had to get back to their kehilat. So the hotels would make a special deal, the Pioneer, the Pine View. If you stayed through Sunday, go back Monday, you got a special deal. So people who weren't in the active rabbinate, people who were retired, stay another few days. So one year in the 70s, when the Rav was widowed and all alone, they prevailed upon him, Rebbe, be here, bleib mit uns nach ein paar Tag, be with us a few more days. We'll have a nice time together. The Rav went rowing with them. There's a picture of the Rav. Roy Albert has a picture of the Rav in the rowboat with a baseball hat on. And that's the story with the Friday night when the all the waiters were with non-Jews, with Gentiles already. It's not like who here worked as a waiter, a busboy, normally, you know what I'm talking about. But by the 70s was all Puerto Ricans, Kvase Mexicans, Colombians. So the table is all set and the Rav comes over and he gets ready to make Kiddush. No, take it all away, take it all away. The Rashbam in Avei Psachim that the table has, you haven't yet inaugurated the Shabbos table. Nothing is allowed to be on it. You make Kiddush, and with that Kiddush, your table turns into a Shabbos table. That's why the Rav is Makpid Havdalah, you have to have a tablecloth on, sitting. It's like you end the Sudat Shabbat. From that point on, it's a vachadik suda. When Yomo sits down to eat, it's a weekday meal, not a Shabbos meal. So the poor waiters couldn't believe what's going on. All their work, the salt, the butter, the celery, the this, the that, I mean the margarine, it's all put on chairs, and the Rav makes Kiddush, and then they signal the waiters to come and put it out again. So anyway, one time at the table, they were talking with the Rav about great ideas that motivated mankind. So they spoke about Freud, Marx, and Machiavelli. And the Rav said, all three were right, and all three were wrong. What does it mean, wrong? They each thought they were totally right, that that's the reason for human development. No. It's a third, a third, a third. And then the Rav started to bring proofs. Marx, Mishe Yesh Lamana Rav Semataim, he was quoting Gemaras. And then when he came to Freud, he dealt with the parent-child relationship. And why does Kibud Av V'Aim have to be a mitzvah? It's a logical thing. Your parents took care of you, did everything for you when Ellie has a little baby. Now, much later in life, you need help. But this is where the relationship, the enmity, under the surface, the resentment, it has to be declared a mitzvah. Otherwise, most children would say, my parents did this, that, you did the wrong thing. You know the way kids are. I always say about children, when they turn 29, suddenly they say to their parents, wow, you grew up so much this last year. Until the kid was 29, he had every tiner in the world against his parents. Kid turns 29, he starts to understand what parents, child, develop. So, unfortunately, the greatest rabbanim look at the kids that come out at times. Freud is a third right. Alright, with Machiavelli, with politics, the Rav quoted Al Titvadal Rashut. For every great idea, he found a Gemara to support Freud, Marx, Machiavelli. But each one is only one third right, not entirely right. So, and there's more. They charges against Rabbi Goldman what people claim. Not only did he minimize the service, permitted mixed pews, men and women sitting together, abolished the saying of grace at public dinners. What need is there for Birchat HaMazon, Birchat Kohanim? Oh, how the reform mocked Birchat Kohanim. Who the heck are the priest? Who needs priest? What do you mean we have priests today? What are we, Catholics? Birchat Kohanim, who are they? Who gave them the power? He abolished Birchat Kohanim. More than that, he kissed the bride after he performed the wedding ceremony. Vic, I saw with my own eyes, it's all online, there's a YU graduate who is a rabbi in Los Angeles, came in Aliyah, taught at Pardes, ordained women, and at the ordination ceremony, each woman came up to him and he shook hands and held the hand. Ribbono shel Olam, I looked at it, I couldn't believe my eyes. One woman after another, a pretty woman, an ugly woman, it didn't matter who the woman was, whatever. Gili arayat b'parhesia. And this is a Rav, a Talmud of Rav Soloveitchik, a little younger than I am, Pardes, Ribbono shel Olam. At least he didn't kiss them. Believe me, at the next Chag HaSmicha they'll hold, it'll be like French. The French meet on either cheek, they give you a kiss. That's par for the course. No, he kissed the bride. All right. This is Solomon Goldman. Why? Why is this so important? Why does it affect us? How does the whole era, the question, how does it relate? Not just to us, the Torah, America. Machon Lev, right next door. Machon Tal, Solomon Goldman. Norman, if you can figure that out, you get the Rakefit Prize. But a little hard to come by. Watch. We begin. Take us a few weeks now. I have to mention that the archives that I'm quoting from just became available in the last decade. When I did my work on Rabbi Silva, I'll show you, I had access to a good part of the archives through what was in the Silva archives. But I didn't have the entire archives. It just became available. And a fabulous article was published. Anyone here from Chicago, you might recognize the name of the family, by Ira Robinson. It's from the Robinson family. This appeared, let me give you, the American Jewish Archives Journal. It appeared in 2016, the second issue published that year, beginning on page 91. It's called A Jewish Monkey Trial. You know what that's about, the trial with Darwin, what went on in the South. The Cleveland Jewish Center and the Emerging Borderline Between Orthodox and Conservative Judaism in 1920s North America. This is the picture of Solomon Goldman. Brilliant individual. This story is a major turning point in his life, in the story of Cleveland, and all that goes on in the subsequent Orthodox and conservative world. How do we have all this material? His greatest proponent were the Balabatim of the Shul, who were under the influence. We have to innovate and put down the mechitza, mix the seating. The greatest opposition came from one individual, a lawyer, by the name of Abraham Katz. And almost all the papers I'll be quoting, sources I'll be quoting, are from the archives that survived in the Katz family. Now, how does the Katz family tie in with Machon Lev and Machon Tal? Very simple. Abe Katz's daughter married a very well-known rabbi, Rabbi Louis Engelberg. His son is Professor Abba Engelberg, also a mismach of the yeshiva, but went on, a professor, I think, in mathematics, unless I'm wrong, or physics, very brilliant individual. He came in Aliyah shortly after we did. He is one of the leading lights over the last 40 plus years in Machon Lev, and he is the dean. I don't know today, he may be retired, but he was the dean of Machon Tal, the feminine version of Machon Lev. If you look down the street, there's a big sign up that they're going to build a big institution, Machon Tal, within a 5-minute walk of where we're sitting. And that's all part of Machon Lev, Machon Tal. Professor Abba Engelberg, a very well-known name. Jack, you know him from the Stiblach in Katamon. Wonderful individual. This story is his grandfather, who was the person who took on Solomon Goldman.
Was he a member of the synagogue?
You'll see. I'm going to tell you the story right now. Okay, now the story here is very interesting. It's all from the archives of Abraham Katz. In 1917 in Cleveland, there was a merger between two old shuls, neighborhood changing. They're coming, as we would say, uptown to a better area, Anshe Emet and Beit Tefillah. Anshe Emet, which had been organized in 1869 by the original East European immigrants who started to come after the Civil War, and that itself is a story unto itself. Herbie, if you are an East European, your blood in America, 99.99%, the only exception is Morty Tarrigan's family. He'll explain to you. And you're still Jewish. You did not come to America before 1866, 67, 68, 69. Why? Before that time, in order to come to America, you had to hear about America. Who heard about America? Germany, Western Europe, newspapers, more enlightened, parts of Hungary. They're the original settlers here. The Sfardim in America, when I say here, I mean where I was born. The Sfardim running away from the Inquisition. All right, you all know they came, a small number, afterwards the Germans. The East Europeans, same Nishkehet from America. They didn't hear about America. They were in Shtiblet. They were davening. Who had newspapers? But then the Civil War broke out. The Civil War traumatized every Jew over the world. Why? They heard brothers are fighting brothers. Cousins are fighting cousins. Over what? Over black men? Freeing them, they were traumatized. This is true. And Yitz, listen carefully. They couldn't wait to get the news. Suddenly, one Jew in Warsaw was enlightened and wealthy. He got a newspaper. In the Shtibel, everyone jumped on him after me. Was his nice? What's new? Was treffs? What's happening? Was geht sich an mit der Schwarze? They couldn't believe it. Mit der Haget eine die andere. Oh my gosh, Charlie, 4 years, America became real. You follow? It's like 67. The Six-Day War. Israel became tangible. And after the Civil War, the East Europeans start to come. At first it's a trickle, thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions. It's unbelievable. And that's how the shul was organized. Now, already at a very early stage, the Balabatim started to talk about mixed seating. This is America, this is Cleveland, the reformer all over the place. Why are they so successful? Why are we having a problem with the holding on to our children and grandchildren? But there always was a majority against mixed seating. By the early 1900s, they did make one innovation. The Bima for reading the Torah was moved up front. no longer in the middle of the shul. And this was an innovation. They watched the church, the Reformed temple. Why should it be in the middle? Up front, near the Aron Kodesh, near the eastern wall, Mizrach Vant. That innovation they did. Now, what do you say, Jack? It's against Torah, not against Torah Tzvi. You see, right away, you have a compromise here. Mixed seating, they refused. The Bimer up front, in Mamaloshen, Nishkefelech. It's not terrible. Not terrible.
The Yekish Shul I was raised in had the Bimer in the front, and it was as firm as could be.
And how could that be, that they had the beam in the front?
It was. In later years, when younger people started living, they moved into the center. But the old timers who were
from,
as you can imagine.
Right, but the beam was in front. All right. Now, here we come to the high point of today's shiur. This ties us in with what we spoke about a number of months ago. Remember, I showed you a memoir on the daughter of Ramaz, Rav Moshe Zvulun Margolis, from the New York magazine, The New Yorker, remember? It's a memoir. It was a fascinating memoir, but I'm not interested in the memoir, I'm interested in one point in the memoir. Spoke about her brother. Ramaz's daughter had a brother, Ramaz had a son, who was killed in a car accident. His name, Samuel Margolis, Reb Shmuel Margolis, son of Ramaz. His years, 1881-1917. Nebuch, 36 years old. Never married. Who was he? Who was he? This kid was sent away to Europe at an early age. Studied in Telz, was a musmach of the Telz yeshiva. Came back to America, went to Harvard. Charlie, a Harvard graduate like you are. Just think, what a brilliant kid. Rabbi, bachelor's. Came to Cleveland, and he became the rabbi of this shul that was established in 1869. As the first, Samuel Margolis, Shmuel Margolis, we had just tied it all together. As the first English-speaking Orthodox rabbinic spokesman in Cleveland. He was a breath of fresh air. A rabbi whose native language was not just Yiddish, but English as well. A rabbi who yet had smicha from Europe and concomitantly was a graduate of Harvard University. A rabbi who had perhaps the biggest yichus on the American scene. Ramaz, the most well-known rabbi, Boston to New York, Kehilat Yeshurun, grandfather-in-law of Joseph Lookston. Wow. And this man played a big role on the Cleveland scene. He brought in the nascent Union of Orthodox Jewish Congregations that had just been organized in 1898. He established the branch in Cleveland. But who was he, this Samuel Margolis? Different in certain basic respects from his colleagues in the East European Orthodox rabbinate in Cleveland. For instance, clean shaven. Now look at his father. Do you ever see Ramaz's beard? If you turned him over, you could sweep the floor with that beard. This was a beard, not the way Jack trims his beard, and Sweet trims his beard, and Dov trims his beard. And yet the son, clean shaven. All right? Is that allowed? Not allowed? Ellie, you're going to go into the rabbinate in the United States. What are your plans? What are you doing in the Kollel? What do you want to achieve? If you're going to go into the rabbinate in the United States today, you can't look like Rothkopf or Rubin looked when they were in the rabbinate. Today a rabbi has to have a beard, right or wrong. But all right, he was clean-shaven. Vic, who else was clean-shaven? Did you study in Italy in the 1700s? Yes or no? Give me your name. The Ramchal. No? Rav Luzzatto. The Mesilat Yesharim. The Ramchal. Rav Moshe Chaim Luzzatto was clean-shaven. All right, it's an atmosphere. It's where you live. It's the influence. I'm clean-shaven. I am clean-shaven. I can't grow a beard. It's not that I can't physically. Psychologically, I saw the Rav. When I was with the Rav, he had a little spitz here. The rest was clean-shaven. We asked the Rav. I remember, I can tell you, we asked him, Eric Zimmer, Yitzchak, Rabbi Reuben, you remember Yitzchak Zimmer? She'd live and be well, a giant of Torah, a giant of Yirat Shemayim, a Yekka, by the way.
A historian,
Bar Ilan, Yekka, a German. And he asked the Rav, Rebbe, I'll never forget it, it was before Pesach, we're breaking, Rebbe, I'm afraid of Pesach, HaKashim Pesach, everything, we're wishing each other well. Rebbe, can I shave on Chol HaMoed? And the Rav says, I'd like to know about your practices. When do you shave ordinarily? I shave every day. You shave every day? What's for Shailis does? What are you, in mourning? Of course you can shave Chol HaMoed. All right. Psychological. I have many grandchildren that have beards. I don't know if that beards out of religious reasons or just it's easier. You don't have to waste 5 minutes a day shaving and face $50 buying a new shaver. Clean shaven. More than that. We'll agree that that's not revolutionary, but it shows the man, a Harvard graduate, part of the times, clean shaven. Margolis also introduced confirmation and late Friday night services in the congregation. New confirmation? What does confirmation mean? All the girls turn 12, you make a big party for them. The boys all turn 13, in addition to the individual bar mitzvah, you make a public ceremony. Tell me, Tzvi, is this good, bad? What do you think? What do you think? Can we accept it? There's no question about it. It's a shmecht of Reform Judaism. The smell is Reform Judaism. On the other hand, I have to tell you, in Chorev, where my daughters went to school so many years ago, there were no bat mitzvah yet in the sense that you have today. When four girls reached a bat mitzvah age, they made a party for those four girls. That's also like a confirmation. Today, you show me one girl, she turns 12, she got to make a party, a sudat mitzvah, she has to say divrei Torah. I'm not saying this sarcastically. I have to say, you 100% have to encourage it. Look into the tshuva that had been written, the Sridayesh and others. Even Reb Moshe, was hard it was for Reb Moshe to acknowledge, but all right, we have to do what we can. This is the greatness of the Lubavitcher Rebbe, Kolein Vabat Matli Kanedot Shabbat. He gave the women a mitzvah that's their mitzvah, and let a girl do it from the age of 3. My daughters have been lighting candles, they lit little candles, wasn't it? But from the age of 3 on. I remember once we were in a hotel for a bar mitzvah of a rabbi, he was a kid then, a family friend, a Talmud of mine later, so it was his bar mitzvah in the Washington Hotel in Bell Harbor. I remember the Washington Hotel, and I remember my wife lighting regular candles and my little daughters lighting small candles, and a Yid was there, a survivor. He broke down in tears. Gate Vita, Menemtim, and Cyrus Vita would go further. Beautiful. No confirmation. So you agree with me, it's not the end of the world. Watch what we're doing. We're making compromise after compromise. Watch. Let's go one step further. late Friday night services. Do you know what that means? Late Friday night services? Go to South Africa. Go to Australia. Winter time. Shabbos begins 4:30 p.m. Davening begins 6:30 p.m. Why? People are working. Got to come from work. They go to shul Shabbos. They're traditional. But what can they do? Work is work. I saw this with my own eyes. I just read about it in one of the freebies this past weekend. Guy was in a state of shock. He's in South Africa. The davening is 2 hours after Shabbos begins. I was in Sydney. There was a split. 1 week after, 2 weeks after we were there, a new shul. So why a new shul? What's wrong with the original shul? The beautiful shul, mechitza. The men go downstairs, the women go upstairs. It's in the side of a mountain. It's amazing the way it's arranged. Rabbi is a Chabadnik, knowledgeable, very brilliant fellow. They broke away. Why do we have to cater to the Mechallelei Shabbos? What did it mean? Shabbos begins 4:30, Mincha was 4:15, we daven Mincha. After Mincha, the rabbi teaches a class for 10 people. After he teaches a class for 10 people, they begin Lechuna Ranana. 1 hour later, Minshlepse Chayshta Lechuna Ranana, the Bani Shalalim, you could go through a Perik Shas with Rashi, Taisvis, and Rambam. And Mir, I told you, my Rebbein, Reb Chenech Vishman, I love Reb Chenech. He was such an influence on me, the Elichkeit. So Reb Chenech said, Einzach, one thing I regret, he said. We didn't sing, we didn't daven Lechuna Ranana, we learned Gemara, and then we picked up Baruch Hu. It's a Kabbalistic edition. Lechuna Ranana. Shoma v'zacha b'diba recha, it shall be one reference in the Gemara that you have to say that Friday night. No, they sat and learned. He says, Fadas ha'v'chribul. That's the only thing I regret. We didn't appreciate the Kabbalat Shabbos service. All right, you have Kabbalat Shabbat and the Lechadodi and the singing. And now it is 6:30 and the rabbi introduces the guest from Israel. There isn't an empty seat in the place. And then after I finish my Narishkeit, 25 minutes later, a half hour later, Baruch Hu, with a chazan and a choir. No, the people broke away. We daven 4:15 mincha, right into Lechuna Ranana, right into Baruch Hu. 5:30, 5:45, we're home making Kiddush. We don't have to starve Friday night because of the Mechallelei Shabbos. Late Friday night service. Today, normally no one even knows what I'm talking about. When I was in the rabbinate, this was yes, when we had a follow form, they asked you, before they placed you, what level are you on? And among the questions, will you permit a late Friday night service? Will you permit mixed seating? Will you permit separate seating without a mechitza? Follow? These were questions that are today, the kid going into the rabbinate, these questions aren't even asked. Oh, but he asked terrible questions. Will you permit the women to dance with the Sefer Torah on Simchas Torah? No. Deal with that one. Will you permit the women to have their own prayer group and read from the Torah? Will you permit the women to make Birchat HaTorah? In other words, the women today know how to learn. So let's say we won't say Birchat HaTorah in the morning. Ashkenazim can say Birchat HaTorah, right? I have Sfadiyot, the granddaughters-in-law, but they're all, everyone is ruined here. You become one. Baruch Hashem, Baruch Hashem. I think they daven normal. They don't even know what a Rav Ovadia Yosef Siddur is. They're Ashkenazized, I'm saying. So, these women, they won't say Birchat HaTorah. When I'm called to the Torah, I'll say Birchat HaTorah. No, these are the questions today. What can we permit? What can't we permit? And Nebuch, this Samuel Margolis, the pride of the shul, clean-shaven, son of the most famous Orthodox rabbi in the United States, graduate of Harvard, he's fabulous. He's lenient in certain areas, confirmation, early Friday night service, late Friday night service, thank you, glad to see that you're awake. Do you know what the Rebbe used to say when they corrected him? He'd mix up Lulav and Etrog, Shabbat, Kiddush Habdallah. Oh, Baruch Hashem, in Zayt Nachva. Thank God, people are still awake. Thank you. But we Jews have no mazel. He's killed in a car crash. At the point where he's killed in a car crash, these shuls have merged. Another shul joins them. They decide to build a major edifice, the astronomical sum of $1 million, and they need a rabbi to lead them. They need a rabbi to raise the money, and they hire a JTS graduate, Samuel Benjamin. I repeat the name, Samuel Benjamin, a young JTS graduate. He's taking over for Rabbi Margolis. He allows the late Friday night services, allows the confirmation. He leads the way in building this beautiful edifice, and they're about to dedicate it. 1922, and this young rabbi is ousted from the shul. They don't renew his contract. Instead, they take another JTS graduate, and that's the person we're talking about, Rabbi Samuel Goldman. Goldman.
Why did he not renew?
I'm going to end off the class and tell you why. It's the exact question. When you're going to, your eyes are going to open here with what life is about and who's involved. Why didn't they renew his contract? The man was a JTS graduate. The man was clean shaven. The man spoke English. Permitted the innovations that the previous rabbi had allowed. What was wrong with him? But you see, with the new building and various synagogues joining together, building this magnificent Jewish center, more and more Balabatim are pleading for mixed seating. Separate seating is a thing of the past. Outlandish, outmodish, backwards. Chanukkism, to use that off-color word. We want to be modern. We want to integrate. And they started putting tremendous pressure on the young Rabbi Benjamin. The board was fighting over it. The board was debating. The board finally decided, told this young rabbi, go to New York and consult with the two leading personalities in JTS. Ask them what you should do. We're paying your car fare. We're paying for the hotel. Went to New York. Who were the two leading personalities? Like the YU, Lahavdil, in my time. The Rosh Yeshiva was Mori Urebi, Rav Soloveitchik. The president and technical Rosh Yeshiva was Rav Shmuel Belkin. JTS, 1922, Professor Louis Ginsberg. He was the leading figure. Louis Ginsberg, Gonadir. You don't know how brilliant that man was. A giant of Torah. Grew up in the Litvishi Yeshiva, a follower of Rabbi Yisrael Salanta, a great-great-great-grandson of the Vilna Gaon's brother. Right or wrong? Right or wrong? Remember I told you the story? His mother came to visit him in Yeshiva Chodesh Elul, and he wouldn't talk to his mother. He wrote a note, Vic remembers, my entire mutter, ich bin in a tiny stiba, my dear mother, I'm in a tiny tiba for Chodesh Elul. Wouldn't talk to her. Came to America and became Louis Ginsberg, with all that that implies. Levi Ginsberg, Louis Ginsberg. And who was the president? Cyrus Adler, the great scholar of Semitic languages from Philadelphia, Dropsy College. Yeki origins, Shema Mitzvot. He was the president. And they consulted Louis Ginsberg. Absolutely not permitted. Professor Cyrus Adler, even more adamant than Louis Ginsberg. I quote, Adler told them that he was, quote, bitterly opposed to mixed and promiscuous seating and would sooner consent to an organ in the synagogue. End quote. Follow me, Herb? And by the way, halachically he's right. An organ in the synagogue, you can make a case, mikdash miyad, it's only nisa derabanan, the whole sugyan in mesechet beitza, why can't you play a musical instrument in Shabbos Shem Yitar, etc., etc. Mixed seating? The heart of our Torah, and we just leave Egypt. Oz Yoshe Moshe, and afterwards, the women, but they sing Miriam, the Hanashim, the Tupim, the Cholat, the Chulu. Open Gemara, Sukkah, Dafnan Aleph, the whole Sugya, Tikkun Gadol, Asuba Beit HaMikdash, the separate seating. Samuel came back, and like a Talmud Ne'eman L'Rabbo, he said, no mixed seating. And the Balabatim exercised the rights of American citizenship. No clergy, no institution, democracy. Go fly a kite. Anyone listening, I would be curious to know what happened to Rabbi Benjamin Samuel. Where did he go from here? What happened to him? Did he leave the rabbinate 100 years later? Are there still Torah Jews walking the face of the earth who are his descendants? I have taught Samuels over the years. I wonder if they're related. My dear students, Normie, how are you going to go home? Zvi, what's going to be with you guys? We're just touching the surface. But Ellie, you can feel the tension. Where did you draw the compromise? How far can we go? What can we give in? All right. What happens is unbelievable. And it plays, you can feel the outcome of what happens until today, 100 years later. But I have to show you, we're going to go to court, we're going to go to trial. It's going to be a Goyish judge. There are going to be depositions. And you're going to see ultimately what comes out of this. Perhaps we've made compromises. We can justify them halachically. What we can't justify halachically, we cannot compromise. And that becomes the difference. Conservative, orthodox. Conservative now, with a capital C. But we'll get there and detail it. And we have to be thankful. If you meet Abba Engelberg, tell Professor Engelberg, we thank you that your grandparents preserved all these documents. And your Ira Robinson's article is fabulous. All right, I'll show you what I have next week, but what I have was only one part. It's all published in the Silver Era. And the people always commented to me, wow, that's the most fascinating part of the Suva era, is the deposition where they depose Reb Lazer Silva. But now we have much more. So, Baruch Hashem, Ani Modeh LaKadosh Baruch Hu, and this is the miracle of Torah, of life, of teaching. I'm like a kid in class. Herb, 4 o'clock, I was learning already this morning. I already had 3 different siddurim that are finished for the day, and the 4th is my biggest. That already continues later. That's going through Shas a 3rd time. You can't just do that kliyachiyad. I also did a gemilat chesed at 5 o'clock this morning. In my building, there was a family. I'll mention the name: Rabbi Doctor General Israel Drazen and his wife Dina, and the lovely people our age. And they inherited the apartment from his parents, Rabbi Israel Drazen, my revered neighbor, 50 years ago. And they're going back to America. And when he heard I get up so early, he asked me to call him at 5 to be sure the alarm woke him up, because they have to be at the airport, I think, at 10. So I called at the minute to 5. I didn't want to miss the news, find out whether they're alive or dead or what's happening. And Baruch Hashem, he was awake. All right, so that's what we accomplished today. We got started. We've come in. Solomon Goldman and all that's going to go with it. Sunday, Be'ezrat Hashem, we pick up exactly where we left off, going to the theater, going to the ballpark. And these are the interrelations. You can't escape it. We're living in the big world, and we'll even get involved with Thanksgiving Day. I don't know if this Sunday, but the Sunday afterwards. I want to mention, Vic lent me a book by Pinny Dunner. Pinny Dunner is from a very prominent rabbinic family in England. Today he escaped, and he's in Beverly Hills, in that area, and it's an interesting book. It's based upon popular articles he wrote of things that happened, mavericks, mystics, and false messiahs. It deals with some interesting episodes since the Enlightenment. At first I told Vic, he doesn't give footnotes, but it's popular, but he has a final chapter where he gives all the footnotes. I have to say I play a role in the book. The Get of Cleves, my master's thesis, plays a role. And what I enjoy the most is in his conclusion, he quotes me and he says he couldn't believe what he read. I quote Reb Moshe Feinstein with someone who was totally normal, except on days when he went to the marketplace in his birthday suit and gave people Musa to be Chazer B'tshuva. We have to return to the way we were in Gan Eden, when we didn't have to wear clothes. And I quote that, it deals with schizophrenia. And I quote Reb Moshe, and he couldn't believe Reb Moshe dealt with such a problem. And sure enough, he says, I checked up our Akefet source, and there it was. So Vic, I return it to you, and I thank you. The author is Pinny Dunner, P-I-N-I-D-U-N-N-E-R. I have to tell you, this became a whole cause of machloket today. I think we mentioned this, lo aleinu, again, the price we pay. All of you know Eitan Henkin killed with his wife. It just breaks the heart. A genius of geniuses, the man's research is Rav Yosef, it's Rav Henkin's great-grandson, Chana Henkin. Right, Rav Henkin's his father, his mother's the famous Chana Henkin. God have mercy. Anyway, they published from manuscript his work on the Aruch HaShulchan. So they're attacking the publication. Again, I don't want to go into great detail. I have to take for granted you know what I'm about to touch. But the Torah Tamima writes in the Makom Baruch that his father, the Aruch HaShulchan, visited the Tzemach Tzedek. And it's a very interesting conversation that he reproduces, where the Tzemach Tzedek says to him, it's because of the Vilna Gaon we remain frum. And this is paraphrasing, the Rav paraphrased this, who once said, we need the Eidah Haredit, and we need Agudat Yisrael, and we need Mishwai. Mizrahi would do this and do that, but a good is looking over their shoulder, so they have to behave. A good would do this and do that, but the Eidah Haridit is looking over their shoulder, so they have to behave. So here it says that Sanat Tzedek said, because the Nevil Nagon, we remain from, we didn't innovate. So there's a correspondence going back and forth. How did the Aruch HaShulchan know this? How did Henkin publish it? It never happened. I have to tell you. My humble opinion is it absolutely happened. If the words the Aruch HaShulchan says are not entirely true, it's a paraphrasing. It's like the book on Harishon Mibet Brisk, on Rabbi Yosef Dov and Levi Soloveitchik Kolinsky's book. He reproduces conversations there. So of course it never, how do you know the conversations? You were around 170 years ago. But it gives you the feel of what was happening. So I wouldn't be so strident as to puzzle out what Henkin wrote about quoting the Aruch HaShulchan. Okay. Weekly moment with the Rebbe. Again, it's unbelievable the stories that are coming out. But this is about a confirmed agnostic who has conversation with the Rebbe, and you see the results. This is the Rebbe coming back to a topic I dealt with in great length years ago in the Kollel, the Rebbe and the Eruv. And again, here it's already, it's not that the Rebbe is so opposed to an Eruv, but he's worried stiff they won't make the Eruv proper. So it's already, you can understand why in Australia they already have an Erev in the Chabad areas, etc., etc., because they do it properly, and you, today we have Lamdanim, you don't have to worry. Here's another story with the Rebbe on someone did a Brit. This is a beautiful story from Fort Lauderdale. I know the area, but it's the Chabad Shaluach there. It's a true story, and he's called by the hospital. This man wants to see a rabbi, and he comes to the hospital, and here's a man in his 90s dying. His two daughters are there, and he wants a Brit Milah. And the daughters are so opposed to Yiddishkeit, and it's a reflection of our times. And the rabbi gets a doctor who's from to do a Brit Milah on a man who's very ill, over 90, due to Brit Milah. He wants to die a Jew. He dies a few months later, and they want to cremate him. And the rabbi pleads with them, your father wanted to die a Jew, bury him as a Jew. They say, go to hell, they couldn't care less. The rabbi raises money, buys a plot, and buries him out of his own pocket, out of his own work, okay? And years go by, and he gets a letter with a big check, one of the women that you have no idea how impressed we were, what you did for our father and the money, and it's your pocket and your energy. I'm now in a better financial position, and she pays him back. It's a very moving story. This has a lot of halakhic implication, the contemporary Israeli scene. Who is permitted to perform marriages? And this is an article by someone named Eli Fisher, whoever that is. And he's against the monopoly that the rabbinate has here. And I tell you, if we don't give the rabbinate a monopoly, we'll wind up being two people. You know, and there is the greatest achievement we have in Israel due to Ben-Gurion, that our children can intermarry. You don't have to worry, this is a mamza, this is not a mamza. We have a reliable rabbinate. All right, there's always going to be complaints. No one is perfect. But we must keep chuppah v'kedushin in the hands of the rabbinate, in my humble opinion. This is very fascinating. A conservative rabbi, very fascinating article. I read about this elsewhere. Rabbi Elliot J. Cosgrove of Park Avenue Synagogue shocked the Balabatim on Yom Kippur, gave a whole sermon that we have to do mitzvot. If we don't do mitzvot, we'll disappear as Jews. He even spoke in terms of putting on tefillin every day. So he's been quoted by Chabad, and there's a whole debate in Chabad. Read it. Do you have to have, are you allowed to quote him? He's a conservative rabbi. What does he believe in? Or no, look, this is a conservative rabbi who realizes we've gone too far. Maybe it's the start of return. Tzvi, you know about this? It's, okay, shake.
Maybe we'll bring JTS back.
back to where
it was. Well, it's got a long way to go. Here, I don't know if you know who Rabbi Zalman Posner was from Tennessee, but I have to tell you, I loved the man, Zichron Levracha. We, right after the Rav and the Rebbe died, at the next RC, at the next OU convention, we spoke together about the Rav and the Rebbe, and in front of hundreds of thousands of Balabatim, we embraced. There was unity. This is his son writing about his father, and how his father couldn't stop dancing on Simchas Torah. And the son says to him, why is so much energy? He says, I'm dancing for the Jews in Russia who can't dance on Simchas Torah. Beautiful, beautiful article from that period in time. Here's Rabbi Yaakov Frank. I yet knew him. He was one of the last surviving children of Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank. And how he tried to establish a Jewish settlement in Hebron right after the Six-Day War, and he wanted Chabad to come back to Hebron. And if I can quote Rakefet to you, and don't get too upset, that dummy Rakefet has said time and again, had the Lubavitcher Rebbe come on Aliyah to Hebron in 67, I don't want to end off my sentence. That's all. Ugh, wow. But the Rebbe answers, the Jews in America need me, the Jews around the world. All right, you can function around the world out of Hebron too. This is in Yonah Yoma, Farkash family hosts Sukkot event. And it's one of the Chabad Shluchim in Muncie hosting the couple that has just gone from Israel, Sivan Rahav Meir and her husband Yedidya Meir. You know what I'm talking about? Rabbi Peretz, Rabbi Doron Peretz is putting Mizrahi back on the map. But the problem is there are no real Mizrahiites in America. They're all in Israel. So he sent a magnificent couple. Sivan Rahav is a Shengdava, her husband, but she is something. She's teaching at Stern College. All right, I wish them mazel v'hatzlacha, but I got to tell you, Yitzchak, did you see B'Sheva this Friday? Mayer writes an article about he's gone out of his mind that it's Yontif Sheni in America. It's not Yontif Sheni. He's gone out of his mind. All he quotes is the Psak of the Shulchan Aruch. And Rakefet wrote a letter to Rabbi Yoshua Grunstein, my dear student who heads up Rabbi Riskin's rabbinic program. Yeshua commented to me. I wrote back, it is a shame that the Mizrahi people don't know the opinions of their own Gedolei Yisrael. What did Rav Kook paskin? What did the Rav paskin? And even the Minchat Lazer agreed with them. And believe me, does it make sense that Eli came as a tourist from America and he's davening Musaf on Yontif Sheni, which to me is Yisrael, and he's making Kiddush Brachot Levatolo while I'm driving my car and playing with my computer? Does it make sense to you, Eli, that I'm in America and all the Jews in Teaneck are mobbing the shuls and davening and I'm sitting at home watching television? Does that make sense to you? Normally, when I was in America, I did everything like every other Jew. Chacham Tzvi, Reb Chaim Briska, the Rav, these years. The only thing I did that was naughty is when I came home from davening, I locked myself in a room, put on tefillin without a bracha, and I said to the Ribbono Shel, if it's a zman of tefillin, this is tefillin. If it's not a zman of tefillin, it's an ornament, ki should be alma, and then I said Shema Yisrael to be an aid. That's it. Yotzei l'chol ha'deyot. Norman, ask a different question. My dear classmate Ani Rothkopf, how the heck do you paskin against the Shulchan Aruch? 2.5 years in the Kollel, I dealt with that very topic. Using my conversation with the Rav when I asked Mori Urebi that question, and then I went further. Kuntas Ashach in the Ramal, Reish Mem Bet Yoredeya. Oh man. You start listening to those Sheirim, you'll stop everything else, and for 7 years, you and Lois will seclude yourself, give her the Sheirim and Torah history in America, and you take the ones and how he can pass it against the Shulchan Aruch. Yitzchak sent me this, I can't believe it, an open letter to Sergey Brin. Google. They're censoring Dennis Prager. Rebani Shalalam, I can understand you censor a kafir. I want every Jew to be ashamed of Shabbos. Dennis Prager being censored? Man alive. Anyone listening to me who lives in America, you better pack your bags as quickly as you can. This is the commentator with the very problem what goes on is about who's the boss of yeshiva, Rabbi Soloveitchik or Rabbi Belkin? Interesting article. They should interview me and give them a few facts. 100 million Christians pray for Jerusalem. This was the day when Jerusalem was shut down, the march of the Shivim Parat, what we bring, it's a fabulous concept. This is an amazing article from the New York Times, how Amazon has transformed the Hasidic community. Do you know that there are more businesses in Brooklyn working through Amazon anywhere else in the world? It's fabulous. A man can sell to women, they don't even have to look at each other. You follow? You can take money from a woman, you don't have to shake hands. Women can open up businesses. What a fascinating article. And Akron, New York Times.
That famous website, Etsy.
Right.
Is being run out of
Lakewood. Unbelievable, unbelievable. And finally, a new book has come out, Dear Rebbe. It deals with the Rebbe and his relationship and correspondence. It's over 300 pages, four different people. Jacques Lipschitz, do you remember him, the sculptor, the artist? I saw him at Chabad. And if I bring it, I was there, he was there. Chaim Grada, the writer that we've spoken about, the Rav Derech Eretz, this man, the Chazon Ish, the Musa movement, Jan Pierce, the Chazon, the singer, Jan Pierce. By the way, I wrote back to my Talmud who sent me this, that I have heard from Edith Nemana that Jan Pierce and his wife came back to Yiddishkeit 100%, like kids on the east side again. Totally observant, that's what I heard. And finally, David Chase, one of the Rebbe's biggest supporters, he himself was a Holocaust survivor. And this is what the new book looks like. Wow, that's a much younger Rebbe. What's he holding in his mouth? Is that a cigarette or a...
That's
from Delicious? No, it's a new book. It's a new book. The author, David Zakalikovsky. He ought to do the world a favor. I got rid of Rothkopf, turned it into Rakefet. David, it should be Zerikovich. David Zak. Z-A-K, but it's Zach Linikovsky. Gentlemen, I want to thank you very much for your participation, honoring me with your presence. I want to mention again my felicitations to all those listening across the wide expanse of Jewish experience. I want to thank Kirby for telling off a guy from Boston who boasted he listens to all my lectures in Boston, and Herbie said you can listen to all the Rebbe's lectures in Jerusalem. Until we meet again, in health and happiness, Das Vedanya.
Stop.
Where's the one with Hankin?